Let me speak in the name of God, the beloved, the lover, the beloved, and the love sharer. Amen. I've been thinking about friendship. And one of my weaknesses when it comes to friendship has been my ability to move on. I'm struck by a paradox of moving on. Emotional attachment to places and people is a necessary skill for a priest, yet so is the ability to detach and move on. As a priest, one enters a community ready-made to receive you. New faces, new possibilities for relationships, new situations and contexts rapidly fill the void left by previous leavings. And parishioners often like to remind me when I do something they don't agree with. They remind me that I'm only passing through. They were here before me, and they will be here after I have gone. So maybe another description for moving on is moving through. I have to confess that being a priest enables me to connect more deeply with others, but at the same time, it has encouraged in me a kind of laziness when it has come to the maintenance of previous friendships, left behind after moving through. And I am increasingly saddened by this awareness. I've been thinking about friendship. Perhaps it's a wisdom that comes with aging, the realization dawning more clearly that when it comes to friendship, there is little time for squandering and taking love for granted. And so, I've been thinking about friendship. Men and women seem to have different approaches to friendship. Friendships they're making and sustaining seem to have now become the social responsibility of women who maintain friendships not only with one another, but facilitate the social worlds of their families, and especially their husbands and partners. While this is a situation that is particular to heterosexual marriage, the dynamic of one partner taking social responsibility for making and sustaining friendships is also something that characterizes many gay relationships. And in my long 40-year relationship, it's largely been Al's responsibility to nurture our mutual relationships with others. This will come as a surprise to you, but I was born in 1955. And in the world of my childhood and adolescence, I remember my mother and father existing in separate social worlds. As the social world of women has greatly expanded beyond the traditional areas of home and children, changing expectations of marriage have also resulted in the shrinking of traditional spheres of male camaraderie, leaving men more and more the passive participants in the social worlds their wives now create, organize, and sustain. On the 19th of March, in the NPR podcast Hidden Brain, entitled The Lonely American man, a number of men reflect on the slow deterioration in their capacity for friendship. One man reports that when his wife is home, there is never as many hours in the day as there needs to be to fulfill their social engagements. But when she's away, after 3 days, he becomes a hermit. A new sense of deficit, of moving through, and a growing concern about wider societal trends leaving men emotionally isolated from one another gives impetus to my desire to revive some kind of men's community here at St. Martin's. It comes as little surprise that women's spirituality group flourishes while attempts to bring men into community together continue to flounder. And I'm reassured to discover that this is not only my desire, but a desire shared by many men in the parish. On the 7th of April, 30 men came together to talk about hopes and expectations for the revival of a men's community. On April the 24th, a similar number attended the first beer and pizza evening. And on May the 8th, we plan a second of these dinners. At these events, men are recognizing and articulating their need to enjoy the company of other men, to eat together, to share experience, to grow together, and eventually to forge a vision of being of greater service in the wider community. To this end, St. Martin's Men's Community is establishing itself as an umbrella under which men can self-organize according to different needs and interests. With the St. Martin's Men's Community, within it we have the level of the large group. Here the process of being a large group, for us that some 30 members, encourages individual encounter. But we also foster the energy of more intimate encounters in small groups. One example is the revival of something remembered with affection. The priest facilitated small discussion lunch. Alongside this, flowing from the traditional concept of a book group, new possibilities for multiple reading, that is, smaller than a book, more like an op-ed discussion group. And maybe we'll have several of these, depending on the various interests of those attending. And of course, the third level of activity is service. This will take longer to emerge, but it will directly fruit from the large social group and the small learning group encounters. And as the community solidifies, there is in the future hope a St. Martin's Men's Community sponsored service project within the wider community. As is the case with the women's spirituality group, the men's community is one of our portal or gateway ministries because it's open to all men, far and wide, Episcopalian and not. Anyone who is willing to participate in building Christian men's community together. Now, the perceptive among you will not have missed the insertion of the qualifier Christian before the word community. It feels controversial to do this because at St. Martin's, the use of Christian as a qualifier is often heard as an expression of unwanted and undesirable exclusivity, more usually associated with evangelical groups. Yet what we are building is Christian community. And the thorny question is, what is it that makes a community Christian amidst the raft of other social and service groups and possibilities? In the Gospel this morning, in the 15th chapter of John, Jesus, building on his commandment that his disciples love one another, continues to explain to them that there is no greater love than that one lays down one's life for one's friends. And you are my friends, he tells them. Jesus is not making some generalized principle point here, the meaning of which is only known between him and his Father. He's being very particular. He's telling them that he will lay down his life for them because they are his friends. I call you servants no longer, but friends, for the servant does not know the master's business. This kind of friendship is a revolutionary political action in a world of strict hierarchies of master and servant relations, characterized by the use and misuse of differentials of power that characterize the normal tendencies or the status quo of most human societies. And the life of faith is lived at the intersection between two axis lines, the horizontal and the vertical. And at the human level, we easily recognize that friends are accountable to and accountable for one another. On the horizontal axis, there's mutuality in the responsibility for one another shared among friends. Is this also true along the vertical axis? Jesus teaches that the world will recognize us as his friends by the manner of our love for one another. He also teaches that his friendship with his disciples flows directly from his friendship with God. This is how love flows, up and down the vertical axis, revealing friendship, love, as a core quality of the divine nature. And in a few weeks, we will celebrate the deeper implications of this mystery on Trinity Sunday. Now, it's easy to get the relationship between these two axes back to front. Many of us have and still believe that you have to love God before you can love other people. After all, this is how the ancient Jewish commandment, love God as the first commandment and love your neighbor as the second, states it. And Jesus himself reaffirms this in the summary of the law. But from the human perspective, living into the reflected offer of divine friendship requires, firstly, viable blueprints and templates for friendship with one another. Developmentally, we do not learn to love God except through the love of self and the love of neighbor. Because human beings, left to their own devices, tend towards developing friendships that usually bear the marks of self-interest. It's easy to be friends with those who we are attracted to. It's easy to be friends with the like-minded, those who are like us. Human friendships tend to degenerate into exclusionary practices. The connection between human and Christian friendship lies in adding to the horizontal axis the vertical, allowing the love that flows up and down to shape our friendships with one another. Our belief that friendship is an essential quality of God reflects back to us and confronts our tendencies towards the exclusivities that preserve so many of the evils of the world. I've been thinking about friendship, informed by the vertical axis, which transforms us into something I've been talking about this Easter season, the resurrection story-shaped community, where friendship empowers us to be no less than God's future arrived in the present. And to paraphrase the words of the great Irish poet John O'Donohue, may we have the courage to listen to the voice of desire that disturbs us. And when we have settled for something safe, and may the forms of our belonging in love, creativity, and friendship be equal to the grandeur of our soul's calling. In love, creativity, and friendship, may these be equal in us to the grandeur of the call of our souls. Amen.